Network Automation Nerds Podcast. Hello and welcome to Network Automation Nerds Podcast, a podcast about network automation, network engineering, Python, and a whole lot of technology topics. I am your host, Eric Cho. Today on the show, I am welcoming the one and the only Hank Preston. If you're a network engineer, I don't think Hank requires any additional introduction. His body of work should speak for itself. He was one of the earliest Cisco engineers I can remember who was 100% all in on network automation. He has been actively sharing his knowledge and helping others for many years on social media, speaking at conferences, making tutorials, and advocating the benefits of network automation. I had a chance to catch up with Hank on a Q&A session about the newly announced Cisco Certified DevNet Expert Exam. This episode was modified from that streaming session and delivered right to your earbuds. I hope you enjoy it. All right. So I think we should just get started. So let me go ahead and say it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you all for joining. I think one of the gifts that nowadays that you, the most valuable gift you could give someone is your attention nowadays. So I think I speak on behalf of Hank as well. Thank you for joining, and I certainly appreciate you being here. So I think we should just get right to it. Hank, you know, Preston is our guest today, and his Twitter handle is on the screen. So if you want to follow him, of course, we'll include everything we talked about in the show notes. And today we're actually going to have a little Q&A session for something that Hank and team has been working on for the last, I don't even know how long, but I would bet it's months and months of hard work. So, well, you know, Hank, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thanks, Eric. I'm very happy to be here. And yes, we've been working on the DevNet Expert Exam for a very, very, very long time. The amount of process and work to kind of put together any exam, but for sure an expert level exam, is massive. And I count myself lucky to have had an opportunity to be involved with this exam from the early days of brainstorming what it might look like to what topics will hit the blueprint, and then now actually working on building out the exam itself. So.
Yeah. Oh my God. Like, I remember ever since the associate exam was announced a couple of years ago, people has been asking about this over and over. And, you know, they kept on saying it's coming, which I know there's a lot of work that sits behind that, but I can't imagine how much work that is, but I guess we'll find out today, right?
Yeah, we honestly, we would have loved to have released the DevNet Expert at the same time as the DevNet Associate and Core. Right. The big challenge just comes down to the number of people and experts that are able to work on any exam. And frankly, it was the same people that helped put together the blueprints and the exams and the questions and the classes for DevNet Associate and DevNet Core are the same ones we needed for DevNet Expert. And so it was just a nature of, because they were all brand new content, we couldn't do them all at the same time. And so as soon as we launched Associate and Core, after a breather, right, we gave everybody a bit of a relaxation. We jumped right into DevNet Expert and trying to define what it would mean to be a DevNet Expert.
So, yeah. Well, you know, Hank, I was just so so excited about what we're going to talk about today. So I actually skipped the part about, Hank, tell us a little bit about yourself, right? Like, you know, who's this guy on the screen? I mean, personally, I don't think you need any introduction, but, you know, just in case, you know, people who don't know who Hank was and or his role at Cisco, can you just tell us a little bit about your background?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. So Hank Preston, I'm a principal engineer with Cisco. These days, I specifically work within learning and certifications inside of Cisco. And then I've done previous stints with DevNet, as well as kind of as a pre-sales engineer and architect at Cisco. I've been here for about 10 years. And my passion for network automation started probably, I don't know, 6 or 7 years ago when I was a solutions architect at Cisco. And I would go out and talk with customers about their just network needs and pieces. And I was noticing more and more network engineers were starting to get worried about the whole automation and programmability transition that they were seeing. Cloud was a big topic, and I would say it's still somewhat scary and undefined, but back then it was really scary and undefined if you were an infrastructure engineer. And so I saw programmability and automation as an opportunity for network engineers to reevaluate, reignite kind of passion for our jobs, what it meant to be a network engineer. And so that's what brought me initially to DevNet, just to help network engineers understand what was the future of network engineering as automation came in, that it wasn't completely making networking irrelevant, that it wasn't going to completely take away and change dramatically the day job as it went through, but it was something new. It was a new skill set. It was new pieces. And so that's what I did for several years. And I think what brought me into kind of the community of network engineers through social media and events and having an opportunity to help define like what it meant to be a network automation engineer, what net DevOps was, back in the day when we were just kind of making it up as we went. And then over time, as part of the community, like we've done a pretty good job at kind of honing in what it really meant to be a network automation engineer. How much Python do you really need to know? How do we talk to software developers and application engineers? And then I think that the real highlight kind of for me that made network automation truly kind of official was when we had the opportunity to look at building real certifications around them. And this DevNet Expert has kind of been the culmination of many, many years that I've been working on it with lots of people. It's certainly not just been me or out there, but I've been lucky to be kind of one of the early faces out there, kind of banging the drum for a bit. So,
yeah, I think that experience definitely helped, right? Because like you said, in the beginning, it was a lot of confusion. It was a lot about uncertainty. Of course, you know, with uncertainty, there are opportunities, and this opportunity presented itself is to insert that track into the existing Cisco certifications, which is vast and, you know, a beast in itself, right? Yeah. So so definitely, I think that kind of experience really drove you toward this path that you're on right now. Mm-hmm. So I have a few questions. So for better or for worse, this is, you know, I put together. So so I'm going to ask my questions first, but don't worry, Hank, you know, we'll grill you for a harder question. My questions are easy. The first question I have is actually, you know, so I've heard all kinds of like naming, like people call it DevNet Expert. That's what shows on the blueprint. People call it CC DevE, as in DevNet Expert, CCIE DevNet. So what is the name? Like, for once and for all, tell us, how should we refer to this expert certification level?
Yeah, it's a good question. And you'd be amazed at how much time is spent on naming things, I think, in any organization. So the official name of the certification is the Cisco Certified DevNet Expert. And you'll see that on the official documentation, on the blueprint, and all those things as they go through. You'll also hear it referred to kind of the shortened version as just DevNet Expert, because sometimes Cisco Certified DevNet Expert gets to be a mouthful as it goes through. So DevNet Expert, Cisco Certified DevNet Expert. As far as like the shortened abbreviations as they go through, there is no officially sanctioned shortened abbreviation for the certification. There's a lot of reasons for that, partially just so that we didn't want to institute confusion with other certifications that were out there. And so we kind of opted for the fact, okay, it's DevNet Expert. That's what it goes through. I was actually one of the early ones that let marketing know that said, if we don't come up with an abbreviation, somebody's going to do it for us. And we just have to be aware that it's going to happen. So I've been laughing as I've seen some of these other examples come through. I imagine over time, we'll see just organically some commonly agreed upon shortening and abbreviation for it pop up. But there currently isn't one that I'm aware of that's kind of like risen to the top.
Yeah, because if you call it CCDE, that is already taken. So taken. But okay, DevNet Expert it is. So
we had the same thing with the associate and the core as well. Like there's no official shortening for those. There's DevNet Associate, DevNet Core, or DevNet Professional, and then DevNet Experts.
Right. Got it. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the second question is also mine, and so training, the timing and location, what I saw on the screen, on the blueprint was, you know, May 2nd, 2022 will be the first offering for lab seats. Is that correct? And so I assume you have to take the written prior and, you know, work your way backwards, right?
It is, yeah. So for the lab exam, the first seating for that will be May 2nd, and it will be available in all of the CCIE exam locations, just like any other expert level exam. So there's no special location. expected for the DevNet Expert. It should be available everywhere, including mobile lab options and all of the scope of what's out there. That is our target for those. I don't know when seats will open for scheduling of the exam. That's that side of the work and the initiatives and logistics I'm not privy to, just because I just haven't paid attention. So I don't know when scheduling opens, but the exams themselves will start on May 2nd. That's the date we have to be fully done and QA'd and tested for the exam and have it ready to go. From the written perspective, so when we made the change that was launched two Februaries ago with the updates to the CC, IE, Enterprise, and all the other ones, like those ones, the written for the DevNet Expert Lab exam is the DevNet Core. So it's the professional certification exam, is the qualification exam, if you want to use that term. So there's no special written exam you have to take to take the lab exam. If you've taken the Dev Core, either by itself or as a step to earn the DevNet Professional, you've already taken that qualification exam. And I'm like 95% sure that the time actually adjusted as well. And I think it's a 3-year cycle now from when you take and pass the qualification exam, so the core exam, before your lab attempt. I think that it used to be like 18 months. I think it was reset for all of them to 3 years now.
Got it. So as you could tell, I'm a little rusty on my the new policies and all of that, but I'm glad you clarified that up. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's hard to keep track with it all. I mean, it's all the details and logistics. And I owe all of my knowledge about that to the ability to talk with some of our other folks kind of in the community and marketing side that answer these questions. And I've picked up from what they've said. So it's a lot to keep in mind as it goes through. So I understand.
Yeah, that's true. All right. So I think the next question is super useful and helpful, mm-hmm. because it's on probably everybody's mind, right? Because, you know, you need to prepare for the lab, and the scope of the lab, since it's a brand new one, there's no prior, I guess, people that you could ask except to the team and you. So mm-hmm. we're taking this chance to say, well, will there be a sandbox free best, if not for rent for the lab preparation? What do you think about that?
Yeah. So there are a lot of resources that will fit in and allow people to prepare for the exam. From a DevNet sandbox, like the platform you can go to, devnetsandbox.cisco.com, and reserve available sandboxes there. As of today, I believe you would find sandbox resources already in the catalog that cover the span of all the technologies that are listed on the blueprint. So even today, you can probably find, I think you can, I haven't like done like a checklist, but I think you'll find every technology represented on the blueprint someplace in DevNet Sandbox today. Obviously, a single sandbox that had all the technologies together, maybe in a topology that kind of matched what you might see in the DevNet Expert Lab exam, would be ideal. That doesn't exist today. I honestly can't tell you whether there's any plan on the DevNet Sandbox engineering time to build one for that. There's certainly a potential for it. I don't know of one that's kind of in the expectation. We certainly could see that. There's nothing preventing us other than just the amount of sandbox requests that come through. From an official kind of Cisco class where you could go and say, I want to go take like a Cisco class, like the Dev Associate class or the Dev Core, EN Auto, and have access to resources from a Cisco certification learning class perspective. I imagine at some point we'll have some resources like that built out, but those classes will usually come a little bit after kind of as things go, because we need to flesh out some of the details that are in place. So that's on the sandbox side. One of the things that we myself and the other engineering folks that are working on building the lab exam itself have kind of committed to do is that one of the things we wanted nobody to be confused about when they sit for the lab exam is what is my development workstation like, right? That's one of the hardest things when you sit down at a workstation and say, okay, well, what are the tools that are loaded? Like, how is the shell set up? What IDE do I have access to? Like, we don't want that confusion to come up from anybody when they sit down at the lab exam. And so we are planning to release for availability download for free on the learning resources for the DevNet lab exam, kind of like an OVA or maybe a Vagrant box type of a file to represent the development workstation image. Like when you sit for the lab exam and you're put on the system where you're gonna do your coding, we plan on making that same type of image with all the same configuration and software and versions of software installed available for anybody to grab and take advantage of as part of their studying. Now, I will say it's not posted yet because we're still building up what that image will look like, making sure that all of the packages we need for the different tasks are there. But we do plan to make that available. I can't tell you when, but I know that it's coming because it's one of the work items that we have as part of our lab build preparation.
Oh, that's cool. So so we'll definitely include that, the exit blueprint, in the show notes if you're listening on the podcast. But if you're, you know, watching this on YouTube video or you're joining us from streaming, so the blueprint is definitely published, and they have a list of items. I mean, I have to say, just like any expert exam, it's very broad, and it takes, I mean, I'm tired just reading it, right? So let alone studying it and all of that. But there's a, I don't think there was as much emphasis on containers for the associate and professional level. I could be wrong, but there's definitely 10% on containers, and they break out into percentage, you know, as well as more detailed topics for those exam blueprints.
Yeah, so the blueprint is posted, and there are the weightings that are in there. And I will recommend folks pay attention to how the weightings are done, because there's a lot of work that goes into designing the blueprint to figure out which parts of the blueprint are most important. And so that reflects what you can expect to see when you sit for the lab exam itself, as well as individual points you earn for solving certain questions as they go through. And so that should help you guide how much time you spend studying on different topics. I know containers showed up on DevNet Associate and DevNet Core at least a little bit, but like any escalation from associate to professional to expert, you're going to see a higher maturity level, higher expectation of understanding around something like containers than you would have seen in DevNet Associate as an example.
Right. So, and also some of these, I mean, just to me, it's kind of a challenge to scope, because like security is basically everywhere, right? So even though you separate security out into a category by itself, and there's certain topics that you could kind of generally study for, but at the end of the day, you know, if an echo or, you know, kind of a state that you have to examine or whatnot, those are actually built into the other topics. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of hard. And I imagine people will have the same kind of question or, you know, confusion about that as well.
Yeah, security was a tough one as we were building the blueprint, as well as when we're trying to decide how to build the tasks that are going to be out there, because we didn't want, I think everybody realizes today that you can't consider security an afterthought or a bolt-on. And we didn't want to have it necessarily completely set aside. But we also, the reality of the nature is, when you're building up a blueprint or you're testing skills, you want to be able to provide the ability to test somebody on a topic without being terribly dependent on other topics that are there. And so that's one of the efforts we have, not just from security's perspective, but across the entire blueprint when we're writing the exam out, is we want to have the ability for someone to kind of earn credit for each part of the blueprint kind of as an independent entity, and not necessarily one of the complaints and feedback we've heard from other exams and other folks is, man, I lost 5 points, not because I didn't understand topic A, but because to do topic A, you needed to understand topic B, and topic B was one I was kind of weak on.
Right.
And so I won't say that there's no connection between the tasks and the things you'll see, but that is kind of one of the things we're striving for, is we don't want necessarily people to lose a significant amount of credit from one topic area because it was dependent on another topic area. We do want to keep them somewhat tested independently.
Yeah, but that's tough to do, right? Even for other tracks, so i.e. Expert level exam, you know, you remember when there was 2-day exam, and the first day you get to go home if you can't even build L3 reachability. So it's like, you can't do IP services, there's no security, and you know, best of luck next time. So that is a tough one, but I hear what you're saying, and it's good that you have that at least as general guideline to say, okay, you're you know, well versed in security, at least you should get some credits and recognition for that part.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So you actually went into the next question a little bit, and thank you for doing that. But so you were talking about giving a very precise, non-surprise list of tools that you have available on the lab exam and as a VM image or as some sort of vagrant file or whatnot. Are you able to share at least a little bit of, I mean, these are all the tools that, you know, DevNet training and the advocate, right? Like whenever you go to DevNet events, you're at the workstation, these are the tools available. So are you at least, can you give us a little bit of a hint on, you know, what kind of IDE would you have? What kind of Python libraries would you have? What kind of VS Code?
So, it's not even a hint, right? We've already published, like up on the certification pages, we've already published the software list as well as a Python requirements.txt file that includes every, we'd have to go digging through it to find it, but we'll find the link and we can put it in the show notes. I'll send it to you.
Yeah, for sure.
But we've already published, these are the Python requirements that we are going to be building off of. And including versions. So it's like, we're going to use this version of the request module so that you know exactly what you're after. And this is the version of Ansible that we're writing tasks against. And then from a software perspective, all of the kind of the software that you'll see either on the development workstation. So like you'll have VS Code, right? I can tell you that because it's on the list. You'll have VS Code. And then we've got the list of what VS Code plugins.
Will be available.
We'll tell you what version, probably in more depth than you necessarily would have thought about, but we wanted to be very specific about, like, these are the things that you'll have access to inside of there. So we've published what Python version we're writing in. We've published what version of VS Code you're going to have access to. Fairly sure Postman is on there as it goes through. So you'll see a full list of every piece of software that you'll have access to on the candidate workstation or the dev box. And then the versions of software that you'll run into on things that you might interact with. So like what version of ACI are you going to run into? So, you know, what APIs to practice with, what version of NXOS or iOS, all of that is published. And it was published a couple of weeks ago when the announcement went public. It was one of the things that we had to have ready as a lab SME team to do the publishment. Packaging all that up into that candidate workstation so that you can practice on the exact same environment that you're going to run into in the lab. We're going to get that out when we have it ready and we can package it appropriately.
Got it. Yeah. So no share live coding or share code extension on VS Code, I imagine. No. So no help on that point. Okay.
Yeah. So and like all the expert level exams, when you sit down and you're connected into your pod to take your exam, you'll have no internet access. You are it's a walled garden for the exam. It has to be to keep it honest and safe and secure on all of those. So you'll have access to everything necessary to do the exam, including documentation, within the pod. But there's no internet access at all.
So no internet access means Stack Overflow or no Google search, of course, but you would have just like all the other expert exams that, you know, so previously it was like a Cisco CD, but then it later on becomes like a website, right? So, so we will have access to the API documentation, all the necessary like JSON format, Yang model formatting and all of that. So you don't need to memorize that, but
no,
but you do need to know how to use like request, for example, if that's one of the libraries that you're going to use to know. But there's some help syntax with it built within Python, right? So if you have Python available, then you could do the dir, the help, and kind of say, oh, request get, request post, and that sort of stuff.
Yeah. So the expert level exams from Cisco are always kind of billed as open book, right? The idea is that nobody's expected to memorize every manual, every API guide, every document that's out there. And so our goal is to provide access to all of the documentation resources, the help guides, the user guides, for our case, API documentation, for everything that you should need to take the exam. For a lot of the CCIE exams, most of that is kind of Cisco documentation. So here's the guide for iOS XE, here's the guide for NXOS, UCS. The DevNet Expert's a little different because there's a lot of things in our exam that aren't necessarily Cisco products. So we've got Python libraries. You mentioned requests.
Yep.
We are going to capture the documentation for those libraries and make them available inside of the candidate workstation as well. So you'll have access to the requests, kind of official documentation. You don't have Stack Overflow, you don't have GitHub issues, you don't have Google to search. So you kind of have to know how to navigate and what you're looking for. But our plan is not to make anybody come in and be like, okay, you have to memorize kind of all of the methods and attributes related to requests. You should know how to use the library, but if you need to go look something up in the documentation to figure out exactly like what are the flags or what's the error code or what's the warning I have to grab to adjust to like silence SSL verification, right? Well, the docs will be there for you.
Right, right. That's actually great to know. And most of the libraries that you guys have posted on the list or the trainings I've been to are all fairly mature. So they will have, you know, read the docs or, you know, something that you could encapsulate. So it's not a total surprise. You know where to click, where to navigate for the actual API that you have to use that libraries with. So that's a good point.
And our goal is to, just to be clear too, our goal is to represent the documentation across the board the same way you would run into it in the real world.
Right.
And so if at all possible, that is our goal. Now, there are some libraries out there that may not have like an easy way to do that. So we may have to make some changes here and there. All of that will be done kind of as minimal as possible. We want to, if you're used to going to a read the docs page for a library, we want to give you that same experience. So.
Got it. Okay, cool. That's great to know. Thanks for the answer. So I'm going to ask the next question, but for those of you who are participating with us on live in streaming, feel free to type your question in the comments. So after this next question, I'll go back to the comment section because there's a little bit of a delay. So go ahead and type it in. And if you have anything that's on your mind, if we're going to cover it later, I'll let you know, just hold your horses. But, you know, I also want to, you know, address any kind of concern that you have right now. So the next question is the professional level exams, or the DevNet exams are specialized focused. So you have your data center and your, enterprise. So will the expert level be the same? My guess is I don't see that right now, but of course, you're the judge of that.
Yeah, it's actually a hard one that we had to put through when we were building up the blueprint, because the only prerequisite or the expected prerequisite for the DevNet Expert Lab exam is the DevNet Core core exam. And so we needed to scope, or the goal is to scope the DevNet Lab exam, Expert Lab exam, aligned with the core exam and not bringing much in that necessarily would like be focused on one of the specialization exams, either data center, service provider, enterprise, collab. That doesn't mean you may not see some of those technologies that are there. But it's the DevNet Expert Lab exam is not the DevNet Expert Enterprise Expert, right? It's the DevNet Expert as it goes through. So it is not targeted to be a specialization focused. That means that there's a bit of breadth that shows up. So like in the software list, you'll see that there is ACI and iOS XE and NSO. So there's a you're going to see technology across all of the potential specializations. But it's the same type of breadth that you have on the DevNet Associate or DevNet Core. It's you should be aware of these technologies. You shouldn't become like it shouldn't be a surprise. Like, what is ACI used for? generally understand where they're at. The tasks you're going to be asked to do to those technologies are not going to be something that we would expect somebody to really just understand if they are a specialist in that part of the architecture. But you may be asked to interact with an API from ACI in one task and then interact with an API from Meraki in another one as an example. Actually, I don't think Meraki's on the list because they're tougher because it's all cloud-based.
Right.
That's the idea, is like it's not specific specialized focus. It's more generic, but you may see things from across the spectrum.
Yeah, and I think some of these specialization are naturally aligned better with the expert level exam versus, like you mentioned, Meraki, but also, you know, something like collaboration, you don't see as much on perhaps the expert exam blueprint, for example. But yeah, no, it's good to know that at least right now it's not specialization focused. Like you said, you don't have to be an expert level, collabed or expert level, like all of these.
One
as
of the
broad as it is.
one of the earliest steps that you have to do when you're writing a certification or an exam is define who are your target personas, right? Who are the target candidates that may be interested and qualified to take this exam? And with something like DevNet Expert, that was hard to define because it could be, I mean, you could have a potential DevNet expert, someone that legitimately probably should earn that title, but they spend all their day doing like contact center development. Or maybe you've got another one who is very heavy in hybrid cloud and cloud native development as it goes through. And then you've got someone who's more infrastructure focused or network automation focused. So there were all these potential personas for us to kind of write, engage our exam, this first version of the exam for. And after lots of discussion and dialogue, the general focus was, okay, let's initially go after kind of a network automation infrastructure engineer style DevNet expert. That doesn't mean that we don't want to provide opportunities and potential exams in the future for somebody that may come out of kind of a more kind of hybrid cloud or cloud native type of an approach or collaboration kind of contact center integration development. But that's not what this particular exam was targeting. And if you look at the blueprint, that should be clear, right? We're focusing on network infrastructure tools, network automation style tasks as it goes through. I can't commit to anything because who knows where the roadmap will go through. But if things look good here and the market seems interested in other flavors and variations of a DevNet expert in the future, we could start to see ones that kind of went down a specialization line like we see in the CCIE where you've got collaboration and I don't even know what they are anymore, data center and service provider. We could see those in the future. But this first one was kind of, we tried to go after who we thought the largest kind of audience of potential interested DevNet expert candidates would be.
So. Yeah, and I think that's one of the questions that we will answer later on as far as the market demands and also, you know, meeting the market's requirement, where the jobs are or where the CV requirements from recruiters will get the necessary skill to do the job today. So I think this blueprint, at least from my perspective, matches well to that, as well as some of the foundational, just because you're doing, even though you're doing data center or collab, I mean, you always have to think about software design, development, deployment, regardless of any kind of specialization track that you have. So yeah, so the blueprint, again, you know, go take a look at the blueprint. It's probably one of the few official documents that we have right now if you're intent on being prepared for the exam right now. So I did check the comment section and hi, Eric, for saying hi to us. So, but right now, I don't think there's any immediate questions that we have to address in the comments. So we could just go move on to the next questions and so on. But, you know, feel free to type those in at the end. We're going to leave maybe 5 to 10 minutes again to address those immediate questions as well, I mean, if we have time. But hopefully that's the case. So I kind of lost track, but let's do the specialization. Okay, so we did that. So the next question was, will there be any coding from scratch? This is a fantastic question, and I'm interested in what you say about that.
Yeah, it's one that we talked a lot about as we were trying to decide like what would go into the exam. And reality of a single day's 8-hour exam is a big element that kind of answers this question or where it goes through. I consider myself a pretty decent network automation engineer, but I know even to do a fairly small, to solve a fairly small use case, that's a time consuming thing if I have to do that from like opening up VS Code and hitting Command N, right? Like that's a long process to go through.
For sure.
So we knew very early on that we were not going to be able to write a bunch of tasks that started like that. It wasn't practical. One of the ideas I floated early on was, well, let's make this more like a master's dissertation project, like a senior project style exam, and have everything phrased around like providing like all of the details of what was asked for from like a single project. And the entire exam was like making that one thing, and it would have been coding from scratch and then bringing in all the elements from the blueprint into it. And then I was talked off the ledge pretty quickly because that's just, it'd be really challenging. Like that's a lot to put on a candidate to come in
right.
And do that. And so you will see very little. I don't want to say none because I don't have like all the notes in front of me on what we're building. But I'll say very, very little coding from scratch where you're expected to start from a blank file. One of the things that we went into thinking about for the exam was I suggested, let's look at this from like, what's the job that someone with a DevNet expert certification might have at an organization? And it's probably like, they're probably the senior guy at an organization. And there may be a couple of junior engineers that work with them kind of on automation tasks. And as a senior engineer on my team, one of the things I actually spend far more of my time helping other engineers on the team tackle problems in their code or doing code reviews and solving problems and questions or tackling some like extra complicated piece on a project rather than coding everything from scratch. And so that's kind of an approach we're trying to take with the exam is to say, okay, here's a blueprint item. Here's a task that you're being asked to do. 85% of it might be done. 95% of that might be done in the script and provided to you as a starting point. And then your task, what you're going to be graded on is, can you solve this expert level, DevNet expert level part of this project, right? So I don't expect, like, you don't need to be a DevNet expert to create a shebang line on a script. You don't need to be a DevNet expert to create a basic script structure, right? Set up like arg parse, right? There's things that you don't need to be a DevNet expert for that. But there are parts of developing a project that we do expect kind of at that like minimally qualified DevNet expert candidate level. Like those are the skills that we want to target for. And so that's what you're going to see far more than like coding from scratch. From a coding efficiency perspective, if I interpret that to mean like, did you write this the absolute most efficient way of coding using the least amount of like Python lines and going through that would be really hard for us to grade.
Yeah. Right. Right.
So the general approach we have is we are an outcome driven test. You will be given a task, like this is what you need to solve for. And you'll be told this is what the expected result of that will have to be. And so let's say I'm going to use a really basic example to illustrate the point. That you're not going to see something quite this simple on the DevNet expert, but you'll get a task that's like, you need to create a function that can do arithmetic with integers, and you need to be able to get the correct answer from that. And so when we run a grade and evaluation on that, we are going to make sure that outcome functions. Like we'll run your script. We will probably tell you like what the input should look like, if it's supposed to be flags, if they're supposed to be named arguments. Like you'll get all the details necessary to know how to set it up, and we'll tell you how you're going to be evaluated. And so we'll do that. And if we get the right answer, that's a step in the right direction. There will also be things that we may go look for to make sure that you didn't like really shortcut something the wrong way. Because if you've ever done any expert level exam from Cisco, and I remember this when I took the CCIE route switch many years ago, you'd be given a task, like you need to make sure that this route shows up on this router, but you can't do this, right? So
right.
Some of those things pop in as well. Like we'll provide limitations to say, like, to try to guide you to make sure that you're doing things and you can follow the design guidelines and the blueprints that we're after. And so in addition to, did you get the result that you were told you needed to get? We will also look to make sure, did you stay within the guardrails that were set for you? That's about as efficient as we're going to grade for. We're not terribly going to be worried about linting styles on those. Like we're not going to run like flake 8, and if you get like mistakes on that, then you lose credit. Like I'm interested in that. Like that's an important part of the job, but that's not a key part of like the exam as it goes through on that side.
On a high level, Hank, I understand what you're saying about, you know, you have guardrails. So maybe you say, oh, you cannot use quarks and you have to use these parameters, whatever. But what exactly would those look like, right? Because, I mean, I've been on coding interviews where they provide you with a template and say, instead of a function, you know, you make this into a class and then maybe be more efficient and so on. And if I remember correctly, you mentioned about 90% or, you know, 70% of the task is already done, and you're asked to complete that 30%. So I know, you know, I know this is hard to give an example to, but can you at least kind of quantify that a little bit?
Here's maybe this will help it a little bit.
Okay.
So let's say there's some task related to writing a Python script to interact with an API.
Sure.
And you're presented with a script that mostly works, but you're told you need to kind of improve this script because we're having problems where occasionally there's an error rate on when this script runs because of some interaction with the system. Maybe think things like rate limiting, authorization, authentication errors, 500 codes, right? All sorts of reasons that a script may not work well against a northbound API. And so you're going to be told, hey, you need to solve for, make sure that these types of errors don't happen. We'll go with rate limiting. That shows up all over the place on like the DevNet core. It's like you have to improve this so that it can handle rate limiting effectively. But we may put in something that says, but you can't just put in like a if this sleep 30. Like, we don't want to see that, right? It needs to be slightly more sophisticated than just injecting like a sleep 30 if you get a try accept error.
Got it.
Something like that. Does that? I don't want to get, it's hard to get terribly specific as it goes through, but that's the kind of thing. Like, we don't want to see the equivalent of like hard coding static values in your scripts. Like, you've got to do it at an expert level piece. And in general, we'll try to tell you what those types of expectations are. None of it's supposed to be a surprise.
Okay. No, I imagine there would be more kind of examples that comes out, because this is really kind of an example would speak louder than just, you know, abstract level. Mm-hmm. But I think I hear what you're saying. So you have to be familiar, or at least be able to look up what the kind of error message that comes back, so you know, at least have an idea of what is it leading to. And there should be, I don't know, two obvious answers to that, but you're giving guardrails about not use A. So then obviously they're looking for B. So that sort of stuff would be really helpful in an exam format. But, you know, of course, this is probably not the right medium to do that. But I imagine more information will come up later.
Yeah, and there will be. One of the questions I saw, I think, as people were putting them in on Twitter as we were getting ready for this, was will there be webinars and things coming in the future to help people better understand and get exposure to what's there? And the short answer is absolutely yes. Like, there will be more things coming to help candidates understand what to prepare for, what to expect on the lab exam. Our marketing team is working on kind of scheduling those, assembling what's necessary. So keep your ears open for that type of pieces. We try to be active and post things like that up on social media and send them out in newsletters if you're a member of our mailing list on those pieces. So there will be more info coming over the next 6 months. I know there's a lot of excitement on the exam, and people are really excited to like take it day one or week one. And I love right? I'd be right there with you if I was qualified or if I was allowed to take the exam like that. But that the kind of part of the danger of being one of the first guys to do something is you're the first guy to do something. And so there's a little bit of knowledge. I imagine it comes out in May. By September, there's going to be all sorts of material that have come out from the community helping people with guidance and prep and hone it in. With any new exam, we're starting from zero content and building content as it goes through. So,
right. I mean, I'll be the first to say, hey, you know, you should like set the count back to 10, was it 1023, 1024? So like, it would be like Cisco DevNet expert, you know, 1024 and up, but you're right.
And they're still working on what the numbering is going to be. I was talking with, I heard discussion from one of the directors of our certification program that they still haven't honed in exactly on how that's going to go through. But it will be interesting. We've heard a handful of interesting recommendations, like the number should be in binary or the number should be in hex as they go through. But yeah, so whatever those go in, it'll be interesting to see kind of who gets those very early numbers. So.
Oh, wait a minute. So you're not, unlike other exams, that you're not keeping your own number. So if you were previous CCIEs, I'm asking, are these completely different numbering scheme versus if you're previous CCIE number, you just kept that number, but add like an acronym after it.
So So this is, like I said, it's still to be worked out in detail, but the thing that I can say is, so keep in mind, this is not a CCIE exam. It's not CCIE DevNet. Just like the CCDEs, if you go get a Cisco certified design expert, that's not a CCIE number. You get a CCDE number.
Oh,
that is
okay.
Different from the CCIE numbers that go through as they go in. So there's, I'm somewhat expecting the DevNet expert to be done the same way, is that those will be a different numbering scheme, and it's the same thing we did with CCIE versus CCD. Those get different numbers, and their format's completely different for CCDE. They're based on year. It's like a CCDE number is like 2020 colon, and then wherever the numbers go in.
Right. Something like IPv6 versus V4. Yeah. All right. So. Cool. Oh, that's actually good to know and very interesting. So I imagine that's like a little bit of a motivation for people to grab that first number.
Yeah. And I mean, you might be able to see it. My CCIE plaque is back there next to Captain Cloud. And I'm looking forward to eventually like adding a CC or a DevNet expert plaque next to it. So.
Oh, nice. Very cool. Very cool. Yeah. So the next question is back to what we were talking about regarding, you know, job market. So obviously this is a big investment of time and energy. And so what is the return on that investment? Is that reflected in the job market? So will you imagine people start saying you have to have 5 to 7 years of experience and, you know, DevNet expert certification, that sort of stuff?
Yes. So the short answer is, I personally think the exam scope is a reflection of the job market and what we're starting to see the requests hitting the job requirements and what people are looking for. Does that mean every organization hiring IT and network engineers needs somebody that has like a DevNet expert today? No, absolutely not. But just like not every organization needs somebody with like a CCIE route switch. Like you see a lot of places where CCNA is what's demanded or CCNP is what's demanded. I think we will see the same thing in the job market for the DevNet certifications as well. We are starting to see DevNet Associate like pop up as certification requests and job postings. Same with DevNet Professional. I think we'll eventually see DevNet Expert hit those types of posts as they go through. What I will say for sure is when we looked at defining what it meant to be a DevNet expert and what were the types of skills and things that went in, we didn't do it in a vacuum.
Yeah.
We didn't do it in a vacuum. Like we looked at and talked to hiring managers and IT directors and professionals that were out there to figure out like what were the types of skills that were being asked for, what were the types of skills that were needed that IT leaders were trying to fill, and what would they need to be able to find those. And that's what made its way into the blueprint. There are certainly elements on the blueprint that aren't going to show up on every job opening. There are probably things that could have gone on the blueprint that didn't make it. We can't put like everything on there. So I would say our goal generally is like the blueprint should be a good representation of what it means to be a senior network automation engineer. That's kind of the litmus test I've been using is if I was hiring a senior network automation engineer, right, and they had this type of skill set or close to this, would that meet what I was after, right? Would I be happy with what I think I would get from a candidate? And that's kind of the gauge that we've used for it. I know there are demands on our personal team, like that I work on as part of my day job, that if I was actually hiring a senior automation engineer and if I listed out everything I needed them to do, there are things that are not on the blueprint because they're a little too specific to us.
Right.
And then there are things on the blueprint that we don't care as much about because we don't use those technologies. But I think that's the same gauge everywhere, is when you go to apply or get hired for a job or you're interviewing for a job, the general goal is, okay, do they fit the general persona that's here? And if there are gaps, is it a reasonable expectation that they could learn those gaps on the job and pick them up? And that's kind of how I look at it. So.
Cool. Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. Because, you know, no two jobs are the same. Even though you're from the same company, you're expected to grow into the job as much as your ability to learn. As you know, whatever you bring to the table, you're supposed to augment that and, you know, kind of chip away and fill in some of these gaps, or, you know, chip away some of these things that you may not use on a daily basis. So, yeah. So thanks for the explanation.
Absolutely.
So this next question is, I guess, pointed a little bit. So will we see a topology diagram? I mean, pretty straightforward.
Yeah. So in the exam, absolutely. Like one of the artifacts when you sit down at the exam that you'll have access to will be a topology diagram for the part of the lab, the environment, the company that you're working in, and have all the necessary material that's there. If the question is, will the topology be published publicly? I don't think you'll see that, right? And I don't think you need to see that necessarily, right? It's the topology that represents kind of how we've assembled the components that make up the exam as they go through. That should be fairly interchangeable for when you're preparing for an exam. Like if you know how to make an API call against an APIC controller, does it really matter how it's wired up in the data center? It shouldn't. And so some of that comes down to like, we want to provide access to resources that are important. You also have to recognize that anything that we publish publicly is kind of like locked as part of the exam. So if we were to like publish a public topology diagram, that means like, well, now we can't change it because it's out there as a resource. And so by not publicly publishing it, it gives us flexibility to make adjustments and improve the exam over time as it goes in. So
yeah, and also you have to, at least you have to change it very slowly, right? So any kind of changes, it's like you have to have a, just like your decommissioning or end of life a product, you have to set a date and then gradually, and people have this rush to get into it before it does change. So, but I imagine kind of like the IE exam where you would publish, say, we have, you know, three backbone routers that could inject routes, and we'll have, you know, X amount of type A of devices, X amount of type D devices, so that you have a fair expectation of what these could do. So so I imagine once you publish kind of the equipment list and also, you know, the VM that contains all the tools that will be available to you, you can kind of say, okay, Postman version XYZ, these are your capabilities, and you know, VS Code extension, then I'll be able to, you know, a little bit of linting, you know, like two you know, spaces versus one or whatever. But that's great. So I think that's a valid question.
It is. It's a good one. I mean, we're network engineers at heart. We like to see diagrams. So
right. Like it feels comfortable to see a diagram. So how much networking should a candidate know? Like, I guess if you were to overlay this on the current certification level. So obviously, you know, if you've taken the qualifying exam, which is the core, that you have to know a certain amount of networking. Is that a true statement for the lab exam as well?
I would say yes. So use the DevNet core blueprint to gauge like the amount of networking knowledge that's expected. The network configuration complexity that you're going to be exposed to in the topologies that you see in the DevNet Expert they're intentionally kept only as complex as necessary to go after the DevNet Expert tasks. And so if one of the blueprint items is, can you automate against iOS XE or something like that? I don't need a 20 router MPLS, MP, BGP, VXLAN encapsulated network to make sure that you can automate against iOS XE, right? I can have a 3 router triangle and get the same test against that. And so you're not going to see a lot of like really advanced networking topics show up in the lab exam. And if something were to pop up, you wouldn't be expected as a DevNet Expert candidate to necessarily make configuration changes to those or design changes to those. You can picture this like a DevNet expert in an organization would have a network expert, a CCIE expert probably paired with them. And if they're trying to figure out how to help automate something from a complex network configuration, the complex network configuration is likely designed and provided by the networking expert, the engineering expert. And it's just up to the DevNet expert to be able to kind of generally understand what's meant and then figure out how to templatize or automate it. That's the same approach we're trying to go for. And that's what we're after. We've had discussions that said, okay, if we have in a question, so suppose you had a question that said you're asked to automate this routing relationship across the WAN, Right? That's a legitimate question, right? You need to automate this routing relationship. You don't have to design the routing protocol. Like, you're not going to be expected to figure out, like, okay, I got to type router BGP, and then I've got, like, you would be provided with that configuration as well as kind of what the goal of it is. And so it's kind of an interpretation level of networking knowledge. I would expect a DevNet expert candidate to not be confused if they heard something like, we are using BGP as a routing protocol between these devices. These devices are providing route reflections, and your goal is to kind of automate template configurations for them based on these given templates. That shouldn't be confusing. And you may not know exactly what every line in the provided configuration does, but you could read it and you could figure it out, and you can create a template based on it as it goes through. So that's kind of the level of networking knowledge. It is definitely a potential area that I could see kind of getting feedback from candidates and kind of having to tweak it over time. But that very much is the expectation here, is you're not expected to be a CCIE and a DevNet expert. We may have people that are both, right? We'll have those kind of really advanced, like super, super high-end engineers. We're going to get those, but that's not the minimum line that we're looking for. You should be able to rock up and pass the exam if you've gone through like CCNA and maybe a little bit of CCNP, read the book, maybe did a training class, so you understand kind of the difference between interior and exterior routing protocols. You know the difference between rapid and multiple instance spanning tree, like the fundamentals, and then be able to automate against that. That's the target goal here.
Hopefully. Yeah, I think.
Does that answer it?
Yeah, I think so, because I think it goes back to kind of what we discussed earlier about security, right? Like you security is everywhere, just like, you know, you're in the networking field. So networking is the fundamental thing. So you can't really build on top of it unless you have a working network or working, you know, routing protocol. But you should be given credit on your automation. You're being tested and given credit on your automation skills versus you know, being an expert on building that underlying network. So yeah, back to that persona thing. I keep on looking at Bob on the back. So this reminds me of my previous employer of, you know, we're famous for pulling up a chair in a meeting or an empty chair and say, this is the most important person in the room. This is the customer or something like that, right? So when you're designing the exam, I imagine it's like Hank and team will have this empty chair where it's like, this is Bob, you know, he's the persona that we're testing for, and he should know, you know, so on and so forth. So I don't know, you should like put more stickers or something.
It's not an empty chair. It's a computer with nobody in front of it that logs into all of our WebEx meetings, because these days we can't actually get together in room.
Got it. That sounds eerily similar to Skynet, but I'll leave it at that.
Maybe.
All right, cool. Let me hop on back to the comments. Okay, so we're still good there. I think we've, you know, answered most of the questions that submitted through social media. And, you know, I think we're doing good on time too. So this last question was from me. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a really difficult question or difficult task, and not just limited to you or Cisco or anybody. It's just like, this is one of the heated topic. I mean, whenever you say, when you say, you know, software engineer interviewing and they do coding challenge, or, you know, like they need to calculate, you know, Fibonacci numbers or whatnot, then it's always a hard question to say. Yeah. So how do we, as a general term, like how do we validate technical skills as an industry? And that's, you know, ties back into what we talked about, this whole thing about DevNet expert.
Like, how are we currently doing it, or how should we do it? What do you?
I think both, yeah, right? Like, currently is what we're doing right now. But, you know, I like to kind of pick your brain a little bit, since you've obviously given this a lot more thoughts than I have. So,
I mean, I'll start with the statement that I would be deathly afraid to go out into the job market today and try to do technical interviews.
You and I both.
You have no idea what you get, right? I have a very healthy dose of imposter syndrome. I think like a lot of people that are out there. And so the idea of being put on the spot with like a deeply technical, like Fibonacci exercise, or heck, even take it away from that. If I went into an interview and part of the interview process was, hey, can you go write me this Ansible playbook from scratch to go do this? Like, I would break out in a cold sweat. Not because I'm not capable and I don't think I can go
right.
I'm like, that is a lot of like extra pressure to put on somebody. Right. But there's also valid data that you can get out of those types of exercises. So it's a challenging thing to be done. I think one of the reasons we still have certifications is an attempt to try to help with this, to give people an opportunity to have external validation of what their skill set is. Are certifications perfect? Absolutely not, right? There are plenty of ways that people try to game the certification system. There are all sorts of horror stories about people that are like book CCIEs but don't have any practical skill. So it's not perfect. But I think it's also not worth completely disregarding the fact that certifications are still a really valid way for individuals to go through and do some proof of what they know. And so taking something like the DevNet Expert and then being able to go into an interview and say, for a network, a senior automation engineer, and say, okay, here are the reasons I'm qualified for this. I've got this certification that's and here are the blueprints that are expected and what it goes through. And then couple that with examples and realistic examples of work that you've done, projects you've been engaged with. Here's where having public examples is kind of a double-edged sword. Not every job that you have provides the opportunity to be public, like in GitHub, with examples of work that you've done. And so I'm a firm believer that shouldn't be the bar. Like, there shouldn't be a requirement or expectation that you have to have like a GitHub commit history to qualify for a job, because there are plenty of really good engineers that work inside of organizations where their work is not public and they can't make it public.
Right.
And so having the ability to be articulate about work you've done, the role you've had on projects, to go along with those other pieces is really helpful. Peer-to-peer recommendations and evaluations are also good as well. LinkedIn is another one that's really challenging. I've actually had to step away from LinkedIn this last year because it just got a bit overwhelming. But one of the things I always liked about it was the ability for people to say, you know what, I worked with Eric, right? We worked together on a project. He knows his stuff. Right. So to have that is helpful as it goes in. I'm not an HR rep. I don't know all of like the best science and like research and ways to do this. I'm just going off of kind of as someone that's had to interview for positions, as well as somebody who does interviews. Right. I'm one of the other duties as assigned that I do as part of Cisco is help with interview panels when we're hiring folks. And I've had to try to validate technical skills of somebody during an interview. And I don't know if I'm perfect at it, but it's worked out pretty well. And I've generally been able to come away from an interview saying, okay, I think this person knows what they're talking about. Let's give them a shot and see if they can prove it. And sometimes it works great. Sometimes it doesn't as it goes through. I'm curious on your perspective. Do you have like the magic on this one? Cause it's a tough
No, man, that was me putting you on the spot to try to get an honest answer out of you. I think we gather a lot of answers or questions during the time when we put out social media, and I think that it touches two kind of hot topic in general. So one is certification still valid? Is it still worth getting certified? And the other was how do we accurately judge or gauge someone's technical skills? Because like you said, you're actually being tested on under pressure, right? Like, you're being watched over. And not to say you can't do a good job, but that is sometimes what the job requires, right? You're meeting up against deadline. You're actually being watched over by, you know, your senior manager, other engineers, and other people are taking dependency on your whatever function that you serve. So, you know, for me, it's just, it's a hard problem. And I appreciate that honest answer about, you know, somebody mentioned, you know, peer-to-peer new protocol. So, I mean, I'm pretty sure that's a joke, but it's also a lot of truth in it, right? Like, you're being, you're being tested on, not being tested, but you're being asked to collaborate. You're being asked to communicate. So if you end up, you know, contributing back to an open source project, not only means that you know the technical bit, but also you know how to explain yourself. If some, you know, the core maintainer comes back and say, you need to change A and B, you don't get offended. You know, you don't get too attached to your code, and you take back, evaluate, say thank you, and you know, make your own best professional judgment. So I think that's I don't really have a good answer for it, but I think it's a multi-pronged approach, and it's a hard problem to solve. And there are various companies that tries to do this, right? Like, you know, the coding pads of the world.
It is. I mean, are certifications still worth getting? Are they still valid? The question comes up all the time. And I know people are going to be like, Hank's a shill. He works for a certification org. I do. But part of the reason I work here is I think there is validity in them. And it's a good thing to have to go through. It's even if you don't get a certification, I think seeing somebody that puts together a well thought out like process about these are the things that you should know if you're going to go after like this level of a job. Even if you don't go for the cert, just having a blueprint to study against is really helpful. That's always been advice I've given people. I'm like, how do I get started with network automation? Or how do I get into networking? Look at the blueprints. Even if you don't want the cert, use that as a gauge on what to study. So I think certifications are valid. Clearly, yeah. The industry still does, because it's not just Cisco that still has them, right? You'll find certifications coming out all the time from Amazon and Google and Microsoft and Juniper and Arista. Like, everybody still does certifications. I had Insight. I can't remember for sure who told me, so I don't want to put words in his mouth in case I'm wrong. But yeah. I had someone recommend to me or mention to me, which is a super valid fact, is HR teams need certifications as a way to filter through resumes, right?
Yes.
Like it or not, it is a way that HR organizations go through. If they've got a job opening and they get 50 resumes that come in, a certification is an easy way to do a filter pass.
And or for that matter, college degree, right? Like, why do you even need college degree? Doesn't really, it's not that, you know, people can't do a good job without a college degree. None of that. But, you know, college degree at least tells somebody on the other end about you. You know, you study for 4 years and you were able to, you know, show up in class on time and turning your assignment and all of these other stuff, right?
Absolutely, Val. There's a lot that you learn. The behaviors that you have to learn to earn a certification, how to study, how to learn something new, how to work under deadlines and pack it. Like, those are soft, like, is soft skills still the industry word for it? But those are skills that are important for a job as well, outside of the technical stuff that's learned. So yeah, I think that there's validity in them, and I'm glad they're still around.
For sure. And those keep, like you said, keep the HR people happy and keep a whole industry alive. Mm-hmm. So We're coming out. We're a little bit over, but I enjoy the conversation. And again, I want to give people some context in the background. Is this? I mean, I wanted Hank to be on the show for weeks and weeks, and we had to set up. And we're brainstorming, and because he's been so open about his knowledge and sharing, we're trying to come up with something new that would still benefit the community. And so he actually did this session code. And something that he feels very passionate about and knows a lot about. But at the same time, it's like, you know, he did this code. And so I really appreciate you making the time, Hank.
Oh, no, it was a blast. And it's we were talking before that we went live that the last year or so, I've pulled back away from the community and being quite as external. Just my day job at Cisco changed a little bit. And I miss the opportunity to talk with the community and give back and see what's out there and interact. So this was an excellent opportunity for me. Thank you for inviting me to come and chat with you and the audience. And I think the topic was good, right? It was a good one. It was timely.
Yeah, for sure. So before we say goodbye, Hank, so obviously we'll have your Twitter handle. You mentioned that was the best way to kind of follow you, you know, pick your brains or communicate with you openly. Mm-hmm. Any last call to action, like something you want to get started, like any call to action?
Oh, man. Now you're putting me on the spot.
Yay! Success.
If I will say this, if people have other questions about the DevNet Expert, I am open to answer them. And Twitter is a great place to do it. I try to check it at least a couple of times a day and reply back to messages. And so if there are questions that we didn't answer today, or if someone has something that comes up down the road, you're preparing and you've got a question, send me a message on Twitter. I'm happy to respond to all of those. Obviously, all of the security and NDA and like exam security ones go through. So nobody asked me for the answer key. I'm not going to give you the answer key, but I'm happy to answer questions about the blueprint or technology topics and things like that. If you're preparing for the DevNet expert, have at it. I'm rooting for you for May 2nd. So
me and Hank both. So let me know how it goes. And I'm all yours. I'll invite you. If you're number one, I guess, number 100 and less, I'll be happy to invite you on. And everybody has a CCIE story to tell. And I bet everybody has a DevNet expert story to tell after. So thanks again, Hank. Thanks, everybody, for being here. I really appreciate the time you spend with us. And I guess this is where we say goodbye. Until next time. Bye now.
Hey, Carol.